to his case, where many pointed to another man who is the one who walked into a police station that night with a lawyer and pointed the finger at Troy Davis, who many say did not have a gun that night that the off-duty police officer was killed.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I mean, that man, Red, he appears to be a police informant. He's been in every time. It's like catch and release. Every time he's been in jail, they let him go. He has a rap sheet, you know, longer than the office I'm sitting in right now, in fine print. And it appears that he's the killer in this case. Absolutely. And it is mind blowing. It is absolutely mind-blowing to look at the two men. You have to remember that Troy was put on death row by 9 eyewitnesses. 7 of them recanted. The only two that wouldn't were him, Red, I forget his last name, and a woman who claimed that she recognized Troy from over 100 yards away on a moonless night when he was standing under a tree within a group of men. This is a dark-skinned black man across a very dark, long distance in the shadows. And she said without a benefit of the doubt, she was completely not credible. Meanwhile, 6 more eyewitnesses came forward to say that it was not Troy, it was Red. And so you now have 13 people, including 7 who were among the 9 that put him on death row, saying that Troy is not the one, those 7 saying that they had lied. That's why there was too much doubt. It is clear that the killer's out there, and it is unclear why the police apparently have protected that man for decades.
I think his name was Red Coles. Kimberly Davis, Georgia still has the death penalty. What message do you have for those on death row and for the people of Georgia as, Virginia's just become the first state in the South to get rid of the death penalty, to abolish it?
Well, we just want the people in Georgia to know that we are still on the battlefield fighting for them, and we will continue to fight with them to get this death penalty abolished. We have it's a couple of guys that's on death row that actually still reach out to the family, and, you know, they just ask us for prayer because sometimes they say that, you know, that's something that they don't get. They just ask us, you know, for prayer and for us to continue to stand for them and for us to be the voice of the voiceless. And that's what Martina always said. She was the voice of the voiceless. And that's what we're going to continue to do, is to be the voice of the voiceless and stand with them.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. So we've been speaking with Kimberly Davis, Troy Davis's sister, and Ben Jealous, now president of People for the American Way, former head of the NAACP. Tonight, I'll be moderating a live-streamed event at 8 p.m. Eastern Time to honor Troy Davis's life and reflect on the movement he helped build with Troy Davis's sister, Kimberly Davis, and his nephew, DeJean Davis Correa. Details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Mary Terasena, Tammy Warnoff, Chirina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masuda, Adriana Contreras. Special thanks to John Randolph, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
It's been rough for a while, but with COVID for the past 2 years, it's been insane. And we've all, on both sides, been trying to get our points across about how we feel. A 24-year-old basketball player just died from around where I live, in my district. My district, as you know, is Marjorie Taylor Greene's district. A person who said that, hey, if you're healthy, you'll be fine. 24-year-old played basketball. Dead. 24 years old. He's dead. Otherwise healthy. We need to quit calling people stupid, and we need to figure out a way to do this without screaming and getting mad. But I just don't even know anything other than to say that don't do it because of your politics. Get vaccinated so that you can see your family at Christmas this year. Is that enough? Just do it so you won't be 24 and dead. Just do it so you can live.
It is 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's time once again for Off the Wall. think now's a good time to step in. It's another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Present. Over here.
No, I know. I'm just trying to figure out, is it autumn yet? Did it start?
No.
When does it start? It's today's the 21st, right?
Okay, maybe this is it then.
Maybe this is it.
Could be this evening or tomorrow evening.
We should know this. We're on the radio. We should know these things.
You want me to check?
Well, could you? How would you check?
You
should we ask Alexa, maybe? She would know.
I wouldn't believe what I could conjure up if you give me a second.
It's off the wall, where it may be summer or it may be autumn. We don't really know. But it's not winter and it's not spring. That much we can tell you. And there's a moon in the sky. I'm not sure if it's full or not, but it's pretty close to being full. And right now it's getting a little dark because the sun's going down. Which is not actually true. The Earth is revolving or rotating. It's not the sun. I mean, the sun is moving, but it's not actually setting. But you know that. Actually, do you know that? Because science these days is the enemy. And maybe people don't know certain things. I expect the belief that the Earth is the center of the universe to come back in schools. And something that is mandated to be taught to our kids. You know, I was behind a school bus the other day. And I saw all these kids getting off the bus, stop after stop after stop, but they all were wearing masks. You know?
Over their faces.
Yeah, and they weren't traumatized in any way. It was the most amazing thing. The only time this turns into an issue is when your damn parents make it into an issue. But every instance I've seen of kids having masks on, they're not upset. In fact, they're eager to put it on because they know it keeps them healthy, and they want to do the smart thing. It's not that big a deal.
None of them looked like they were having any problems with it.
No, not at all. I mean, they took the mask off when they got off the bus because on the bus you have to wear a mask. It's they know that, and some of them actually kept it on while they were walking, but. You know, it's nobody seemed upset or sad. They were acting like kids in every other way. And I've noticed that everywhere in society, you know, every group of people that is not part of some lunatic fringe, they get it because it's not that much to get, you know, and it's really the only way to get through everything. And it basically got us this far. Things would have been so much worse if we didn't take that simple precaution in the last year. And it's really the only way to continue moving forward because so many people haven't gotten vaccinated that we're not at the stage where we can say the virus is completely defeated. And of course, as long as the rest of the world doesn't have access to the virus, it's still going to be out there making all kinds of variants with all sorts of surprises. So, yeah, you know, we really have to focus on the important issues here. And as usual, we're not. So...
Yeah, now would be a good time to get things right and not get stuck in sort of political feedback loops.
It's insane. It is so insane. And the crazy thing is, Biden's popularity is taking a dive because of COVID. I don't get that. Here's a guy who's been doing nothing but trying to fight this thing and get people to do the intelligent thing. He's getting criticism for saying he's losing patience. I mean, I lost patience over a year ago, but you're just losing patience now, and people are saying, "Oh, that's mean. That's nasty. He shouldn't talk like that." Yeah, he should talk like that. He should smack their asses, I think, because seriously, it's ridiculous what we are going through. The idiocy, the stupidity, and the conspiracies that are just basically taking off everywhere, because they are able to, because they have the social media platforms, because they're able to. To spread like wildfire, and people don't really care about their well-being. That's pretty apparent when we have 675,000 people dead, more people now than with the misnamed Spanish flu of 1919. You know, I looked at the numbers. I actually did this years ago because I was amazed at how nobody talked about the flu pandemic of the early 20th century. And I saw over 600,000 Americans die. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that? Well, you don't have to imagine anymore because it happened again. Now, granted, we have more people now. So I guess if you want to really compare, it's not quite the same because you have to multiply by however many more people we have now. But that's really a disgusting way to look at humanity, at individual lives. 675,000 people died in our country. And we're still debating whether or not there is something actually going on that is worthy of all of us uniting and doing the proper thing. At this stage, there's literally nothing that will get people to act intelligently, I don't think. I don't want to sound so pessimistic, but boy, it's been such a struggle. You know, I don't know how we get past this without just continuing to do a lot of yelling and screaming. It's not what I desire.
Hopefully it burns itself out a little bit. I don't know that the enthusiasm will wane. It seems to be coalescing and changing, much like the virus is. Mm-hmm. You know, it sort of brings in some storyline or some current political thing and mixes it around with some existing group or grievance, and it's not helpful to the imperative to get good information out there and answer people's questions, of which they have a lot.
Well, they already have the answers, so there's no way you can answer their questions. That's the problem. They say do your own research. Okay, you know what? First of all, unless you're a researcher, that doesn't work out well. Listen to the research. How about that? Listen to what people who are researchers, people who do understand all the intricacies of viruses and medicine and science and all those things that we now see I don't want to include myself in this, but things that are now seen by these people as the enemy. They're suspicious of science. They're suspicious of medicine. This is like looking back at the Black Death, you know, centuries ago, and saying, wow, how could people be so stupid? Well, I see how people can be that stupid. All around us, I can see how people are that stupid.
That is a paradox. It's that serious, yet it's this unsurprising return to some of the denial that has happened before. Like, none of a lot of what we're perhaps shocked by or at least disagree with a lot based on the science that we have, you know, as we go, it's a real return to this primal desire for organizing in groups that no matter what the consequence, just cannot acquiesce or let it go. And it becomes so important to people to cling to this, even if it is harmful to them. And that's the saddest part. I guess reach people who can be reached.
Yeah, I'd like to think there are people like that out there. But as long as you have that echo chamber, as long as you have social media, web pages, things where other people will gather.
Permissiveness.
You know, why not? Since everything is compared to child pornography these days, let's do it right here as well. You know, child pornography, we didn't hear about it 20 years ago. Why is that? Because of the internet. Because the internet allowed people to share stories and desires and things like that and build into a force that turned into a real threat that we didn't see before. Same thing here. You have people who don't believe in science, who don't believe in facts, who want their own scenario one way or another, and they gather power through their numbers, and there's more of them, and they develop into this force that was previously unheard of because they weren't able to trade their stories and build a community. It's really sickening, but that is what we are seeing, and I think that's one of the curses of this digital age, is that it allows the worst of us to gather strength. I mean, imagine if, you know, I hate to bring Nazis into everything, but if Hitler had Facebook, you know, to help recruit people and spread his lies. I mean, you know, he was pretty successful at what he was trying to do, but he would have been, I think, even more successful
under the guise under the guise of free speech.
Well, yeah, of course.
You know, this is what we do when we come here, and yeah, more successful.
But even if you
these are tools that are being leveraged,
right? But even if you just say, you know what, we are evil, and we don't care about free speech, we don't care about democracy and all that, we still have these tools. We still have Facebook, we still have Twitter, we still have Instagram, we still have all sorts of things that we can use to gather people en masse. And we have access to technology where we can basically categorize and list people everywhere and know where everybody is because of their smartphones. Yeah, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare if society turns in that direction and you have those tools. It's weird, you know. I'm thinking back at editorials that we've had in a magazine decades ago during the Clinton years, where we basically were saying this very thing. Imagine this technology in the hands of an evil government. You know, acknowledging that maybe it's not evil now, but it could be in the future. Well, there are plenty of fascist governments, fascist regimes in place now, gathering strength, okay, and using these tools.
And they're networking, too.
We're damn close to getting back to one of those ourselves. You know, imagine if what Trump tried to do earlier this year with January 6th and with overturning elections and pressuring people and basically just taking a dump on the Constitution, he could have easily been driving forth this type of thinking. And it's scary to see how close we can come to that and how many people are okay with that. You know, you see them driving around every day with their Trump flags and their aggressiveness and their anger. They're still here. And they're gathering strength again through other means. So, I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go. But I do know that as long as people basically lose common sense and start fighting with health organizations and hospitals and doctors and scientists and just the people who know what they're talking about and accuse them of being part of some big massive conspiracy. We're not going down a good road and it's not going to end well for any of us. You know, they're talking now about the booster shots and we're seeing debate within the scientific community about whether or not we should have booster shots. And, you know, if this was such a great conspiracy, there wouldn't be a debate. It would already have been decided. We'd be, we're marching to the needles again and getting our boosters so that we can basically still be under the control of who is running the show, Elon Musk or...
Alexa.
Alexa's running the show. Okay, whatever. Part of the conspiracy. But apparently, they disagree. Now, if they disagree on this, they would disagree on other things, too. You know, and that's how it works. It's not always a unanimous decision. And here is a perfect example of how that is the case. So some scientists are saying, yeah, we should get boosters. Others are saying, no, it's far too early and we need to vaccinate the rest of the world first before we do that. That's something that we should not be ignoring. That is actually happening. And, you know, I heard yesterday Pfizer put out a statement saying that, hey, our vaccine is good for kids as young as 5. I don't trust them. I don't believe them. I'm not going to go out and if I was 5 years old, I'm not going to go out and get a shot based on what they are saying. I'm going to wait for the people that aren't employees of Pfizer to look at this, to analyze it, to give it the scientific go round and tell us, is this right? Is this something that you recommend? And if those people who don't have ties, who don't have interests, say that it is, and it's a wide variety of people. So even if there is some kind of corruption someplace, I'm sure there is, there's always corruption somewhere. There are other scientists that will debate this and will say, no, not so fast. So, okay, now Pfizer has made their statement. Now the scientific community gets to have at it. And we believe what they say in the end. We should, because they're the ones studying this. I'm not the one studying this. I'm not the one who's devoting my life to the study of diseases and how to eradicate them. Those are the people you want to listen to. When your car breaks down, auto mechanic is the person to go to, not a butcher. So you just have to know where to go when you have a certain thing going on. who are the experts? Trust them. Never trust blindly. No one is saying that, but this automatic distrust, this automatic everyone is part of a conspiracy thing, it's easy to fall into. We've seen people fall into it all the time, but it's not so easy to get out of once you're in that world.
You definitely want those producers and manufacturers to continue to get information about how their product works and pass that along. But I was actually like pleasantly surprised to hear that there was some resistance about the boosters. There's a lot of things to consider, and it's not on the it should not be for the manufacturer to make those decisions or come up with what the priority is. And in addition to the things you were mentioning, there are changes as, you know, various groups and different risk levels are assessed, that there are logical sort of waves or various groups that will get a booster when necessary if they're over a certain age or meet some other criteria that someone at the FDA came up with and has as a part of a larger plan. So it's all important to let play out, and you're going to notice some disagreement.
Yeah.
So I don't know, that was oddly comforting, I guess. I don't know.
It is. Whenever you hear people discussing something and debating it, I think it's always comforting, you know, to see that process play out. What's not comforting is just seeing it automatically get shut down and be used as further evidence of whatever conspiracy it is you've already decided has happened.
To really just waste time, too.
You know, I don't want to keep having the debate. I don't want to keep even bring up the points because they're invalid points. But what do you think all those people who died, what was that about? Is that part of the conspiracy? They don't exist. It's like, you know, when the 9/11 truthers were out, and they were saying, oh, no, it was actually a bomb. It wasn't a plane. Okay, then where did the plane go? Where did the people on the plane go? Oh, that's not important. Yeah, it's pretty damn important, I think. And you never get past that point with them. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. You know, what is the end goal of this conspiracy exactly? To get people to wear masks all the time? Why exactly? I mean, don't the authorities want facial recognition? Well, this kind of throws a monkey wrench into that, doesn't it? If you're wearing masks all the time, people won't be able to be tracked as much. Yeah, you think about that? I'm sure you have an answer. I'm sure there's an answer for that somewhere. It's part of the big conspiracy for mask-making industries. I don't know. This is stupid. People are dying. We saw the same thing with the AIDS crisis. People who said, oh, AIDS doesn't really exist. There are idiots that go around saying that to this day. They say that, they actually died of this particular disease. Yeah, because they had AIDS, because their immunodeficiencies, you know, prevented them from fighting the other diseases. Same thing here. You know, you're dying of other diseases because you have the COVID-19 virus that is basically making it impossible for you to fight them. It doesn't mean these things don't exist. It means that you are being afflicted by these horrible diseases. And, you know, it's like saying, yeah, he didn't really die from being hit by a car. He died because his heart stopped. It's stupid. Come on. Let's get back to science and realize that there's cause and effect. There are things that we need to be fighting. We need to be united. I don't know.
However that manifests and occurs, to be determined,
it's,
right?
It's not just America, too. I mean, did you hear the story in Germany? There was a killing of a young gas station clerk who asked a customer to wear a face mask. That's it. Senior politicians in Germany are warning against the radicalization of people who oppose the country's pandemic restrictions. 49-year-old German man was arrested in that fatal shooting, the western town of Idar-Oberstein. Authorities said the man told officers he acted out of anger after being refused service for not wearing a mask while trying to buy beer. He further stated during interrogation that he rejected the measures against the coronavirus. I mean, this is the same old story over and over again. We've seen it many times in Walmarts and things like that, people getting outraged because they have to wear a damn mask for a few seconds to do something that involves being inside with a bunch of other people.
Why does that give you any permission to react violently, though?
It doesn't.
It's the violence. The violence is, you know, you're wrong.
Uh-huh. And anything, any kind of reaction against that, whether it's, abusing the person who's making the request that you follow the rules, that's just unacceptable. That's just so unacceptable. So it's not just the United States. It's throughout the world, this madness. Maybe the madness is part of another disease. Hey, how about that? Maybe all these people are just infected with something that just makes them not think logically. I don't know. Because I never would have thought that this would be happening, that this is how people would react. Yeah, I know people will lose patience. We want this over with. Believe me, I want it over with. But you can't argue with the facts. You can't argue with the statistics, the deaths. It's happening. All you can do is figure out why it's happening and keep fighting. And it's going to keep getting worse the more people like this hold us hostage. And they are a minority. They are quite a minority. They're just a very loud minority. I'm getting sick of loud minorities. Well, that sounds racist when I say it like that, but that's not what I mean. I mean, all these people that are basically using illogic and anger and forcefulness to get their way when they don't represent very many people at all.
Yes, bluster affinity groups.
Yeah, yeah.
But so many people are getting along, getting their day-to-day routine and getting on with their lives, getting things that are important to them, regardless of whatever the rules or burdens are around that upon them, because the alternative is not being able to work, not being able to do all the things we're enjoying now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much to do. Like I said, wasting time. This is just a complete, just a chaotic, unnecessary upset that is a part, I think, of a broader attempt at general sabotage.
For whatever purpose, yeah, whether it's to tear down the current administration, which, I see Fox News constantly, no matter what Biden does, it's bad, no matter what. the way he expresses himself, the way he looks, the things he says. The current Haitian immigrant crisis is a perfect example of that, because yeah, I'm seeing him being torn apart on Fox because it happened in the first place, because of the borders. Okay, first of all, the borders are the same as they've always been. He didn't tear down border fences or anything like that. They're there. All these people showed up. And now he's getting crap from the right wing for what? Not kicking them out fast enough? What is it exactly? They're all under a bridge. So, it's not like they somehow got into the country, which I know for Fox News viewers is the worst thing ever to think of all these Haitians getting into the country. But he's getting it from the left as well for not accepting them into the country or for the horrible scenes that we saw the last couple of days where who were these people anyways? People with cowboy hats, and they're saying, oh, they weren't using whips. Well, they were using something that looked like a whip and waving it at people or hitting people with it. And it just, did you hear what they're saying too? They're saying, go back to Mexico. This is why your country sucks, or things like that. Horrible things like that. A bunch of rednecks with cowboy hats and horses and whips. And they're treating people like dogs. And I would not treat a dog that way. It's disgusting. And of course, Biden's getting the blame for this, even though Biden did not give the order to do that. And I know he's the president. He has to accept responsibility for everything. Does that mean he has to accept responsibility for every idiot that works in the government that does something bad? Hopefully he fires these people or completely reorganizes DHS, because apparently they're DHS people that were doing this. But as soon as he does that, then Fox News is going to say, oh, look at this. He's completely soft on immigration and all the Haitians are going to be everywhere. You know what? What is so bad about thousands of Haitians coming to our country? If they want to work, if they want to be a part of American society, I say welcome. All I hear constantly is that there aren't enough people to do these jobs. Places have to close or close early or are going out of business entirely because they can't hire people. People are not responding to help wanted ads. Something tells me people who are willing to risk their lives to get to the border of this country, they might be interested in filling out that application. It seems like the problem solves itself. Unless there's something else about Haitian people that you just don't like. What could that be? This is what the country was allegedly founded on. So I say we have an opportunity here. Let's embrace it. Of course, you know, if Biden were to do something like that, can you imagine what Fox News would say? But who cares? Why do we care so much? What the conservatives say, what Fox says, what the fascists say, we shouldn't care. You know, and that's the problem with Democrats, is that they're too afraid of what the people who don't support them think. And that means that they lose the people who do support them because they're not doing enough. And I think we're seeing another example of that.
Certainly. The continuing resolution for the budget, like, we're not going to work on a budget. We're seeing if the Republicans are okay with running the same kind of finances we did last year. And, you know, we're trying to basically acquiesce our way towards some kind of forward movement. Mm-hmm. And somehow that's something we're to pat ourselves on the back about. I mean, it's just, again, more wasted time. Like, well, waiting if people will come around and continue and stop sabotaging things.
You know, I wonder if the Democrats had more on their side. Like, you know, right now Joe Manchin gets to, like, veto everything he doesn't like.
Yeah, it's stupid.
It's because one person, that's the only advantage they have in the Senate. But imagine if there were more people in the Senate that were Democrats. Perhaps, and I don't know this for sure, but perhaps they would be more courageous as far as pushing through policies that would benefit all of us unapologetically and without caring what these right-wing zealots think or say. You know, we need to at least try this, because all I'm seeing are basically periods of the right-wing being in charge, completely messing everything up, Democrats cautiously coming back into power, trying to clean it up, taking the blame for what the Republicans have done, and very timidly moving forward and not wanting to offend anybody, even the people that hate them. And then the Republicans take over again, and the whole cycle repeats itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we're spending the entire year sidelining big proposals and things that would benefit people widely while we wonder if the other side is actually going to play ball, as though we don't know the answer. It's pretty sick and cynical, but I'm hopeful that there's going to be a lot of people that get, I think, frustrated and just tired of the kind of silliness and wasted efforts, wasted time, when there's, you know, we've seen all of this stuff over and over again. It's so many different things repeating, and I think there's a lot of different people interested in making sure that we don't make those same mistakes as well as or when we see things that, mm-hmm. that are familiar.
And what's all this about McConnell now? Mitch McConnell is now the enemy of the Republicans. I mean,
they want you to think that.
Well, I don't know. Trump seems to want him out. And now the governor of Missouri, who is running for Senate, Missouri, really, I used to like your state. I don't know what you're doing over there. If he wins the Senate, that would be insane. He says if he wins next year, he will not support Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, as former President Donald Trump is trying to oust him. Since announcing in March that he'll run for the open Senate seat with Senator Roy Blunt's retirement, another Republican, Governor Eric Greitens has doubled down on his support for Trump. In a statement today, he said that Trump proved to the Republican Party that the only way to meaningfully advance conservative policy is through strong, uncompromising leadership. That's why, as a Republican running for Missouri's open U.S. Senate seat, I am committed to finding new leadership in the Senate when Republicans win back the majority in 2022. It's just incredible to me that somebody as obstructionist as Mitch McConnell, someone who's done so much harm and has basically helped hijack the Supreme Court and stuff it full of conservatives and basically change the direction of this country for decades to come, how somebody like that is the enemy of Trump because he didn't kiss his ass enough. You know, just one slight, one thing that he doesn't like, and he becomes the enemy. You know, that is dictatorship 101. That's something that, you know, I, for all my criticism of the Democrats, I don't ever see them doing that. I don't ever see that level of scariness. And I have to ask, with the Republicans, do you not see this? Do you not see what you are being led into? It's really fascinating, but it's frightening too. And boy, every time a Republican wakes up, he has to resign, or he says, "I'm not going to run again." And the reason mostly is because of the death threats, because of feeling that their family is no longer safe. Does that sound like democracy to you? Does that sound like a pleasant country? Sounds like a lot of other places I've heard about, both present and past. I guess, you know, when you're on the wrong side, you never really know it until it ends. Then you're basically saying, "My God, how did I ever do that?"
If you get that far.
Okay, let's change tone a little bit. You know, there's this huge controversy going on in Stony Brook, this place called Pentimento. It's this restaurant in Stony Brook. And the Ward Melville Heritage Organization, basically, they're an organization. Ward Melville is a high school I went to. Ward Melville is this was a philanthropist who donated all this land, and Frank Melville was his father. He donated the land for Stony Brook University. So the Melvilles are a known entity. Basically, there's a realty group, Eagle Realty Holdings, that is a subsidiary of the not-for-profit Ward Melville Heritage Organization. Okay, regardless, that's how they're set up, and they basically hold leases for all the businesses in Stony Brook Village, which is a charming little village on the north shore of Long Island next to the university.
And no doubt historical.
Yeah, very historical. Oh, my God, the history. It's just, it's unbelievable. But apparently, they are not allowing this place, Pentimento, a beloved restaurant in Stony Brook Village, they're not allowing them to renew their lease, because they didn't tell them a year in advance that they wanted to renew their lease. Those are apparently the rules. You have to tell the realty company that you intend to stay on a year in advance. I was not aware of this. And apparently the owner of Pentimento was distracted a year ago and forgot to notify them. I don't know what he was distracted by. What was going on last year that distracted people? I can't think of anything. There's no excuse for this. All right. Should have been there. Should have made the call. Should have been on top of things. This realty company is completely in the right. They basically were waiting by the phone, and he never called because, oh, COVID. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I forgot. That was last year. 2020. That was last year. Okay. quickly we forget. Okay. So he was basically trying to keep his establishment in business, and was just trying to stay afloat, and the whole world was falling apart with the coronavirus, and he forgot to tell the realty company, "By the way, if we survive, I intend to stay on another year." Wow. Okay. And they are basically, "Yep, yeah, you missed it. Nope. We'd rather have an empty storefront than you." I don't get realtors. I don't understand that. This place is successful. It's the people in the village and the whole community love it, and they just want to shut it down because of a formality. There was an interview in the Times, Beacon, Record, Herald, Mass Merger newspaper.
Tribune.
No, I don't think they got the Tribune, but it's basically our weekly newspaper, which they're awesome, but boy, it's confusing how many names they have. They basically say that they're being targeted themselves. Gloria Rocio is the head of the realty group. She says people have been demonstrating outside their offices. You know where their offices are? If you go to Stony Brook Village as a shopping center, right? And Pentimento is on the left-hand side of that shopping center. The realty company is basically across a driveway in the next shopping center. You could basically throw a stone. Well, no one's doing that, but you could throw a stone from one to the other and reach it without any problem whatsoever. It's that close. So if you're demonstrating outside Pentimento, you're kind of demonstrating outside the Realty holding place. So it's not really that far away. They're right there. Like I said, it's a small community. They hold the leases for everything there. Everyone knows each other. Now, Gloria Ruscio said a couple of times a box truck and car have been parked in front of her home with Save Pentimento signs. Okay, you know, I'm not giving out addresses or anything like that, but it's not hard to find people's addresses. And you know where she lives? You remember where I told you Pentimento was on the left-hand side of the shopping center? If you turn around and look across the street, that's her house right there. You could throw another stone and make it easily onto her property. It's right there. Everyone's so close together. So if you park a truck outside Pentimento, you're parking a truck outside her house too. So they're saying now that, you know, we could have worked something out, but all these demonstrations, it was unnecessary. It could have been resolved just between us and the owner. So what, they're punishing people for speaking out?
I think that all these demonstrations line there, that seems a bit like, I mean, how many were there really?
You know,
was this a big...
I've passed by there a few times. I saw, you know, maybe 8 senior citizens holding signs. I guess in Stony Brook Village, that's a big deal. But it never was raucous. It never was... Well, I mean, I don't know what went on behind the scenes, but I can't imagine that people are getting anything other than angry phone calls.
You know what I've seen a lot more of is yard signs for people that support the restaurant.
Uh-huh.
So think about that.
Yeah, yeah. One of the members of the Realty group said they've received numerous calls, adding that the protesters know who the board members are, but the trustees don't know who the people are calling and emailing them. Okay, well, you know, there are simple solutions to that. First of all, they know who you are because it's publicly listed. It's not hard.
They can see your dirty laundry.
And you can block phone calls that don't identify themselves, or you could reply to emails and find out who the people are. I'm sure they'd be willing to talk to you. But this whole thing is stupid. I mean, come on. The place is beloved. It's been there forever. The people have poured their heart into it. They've replaced the damn cesspools, which I didn't know renters had to do. And they're basically, landlords are acting like landlords, saying the September 30th, close forever. Why? What is the point? So there'll be a vacant place there, or what? You're going to have an Olive Garden? It's silly. It's stupid. And I think people should voice their opinions on that. Pentimento, Eagle Realty Holdings, the Ward Melville Heritage Organization. Those are all the players, and we'll keep people updated on that. But hopefully some kind of resolution presents itself. Hate to see things like this happen. I see it happen all the time in the city. Hate to see it happen out here.
And it's been exasperated given the circumstances. A lot of these smaller places have been hit hard, and they're still trying to, you know, get reimbursed and back on their feet.
Yeah, but why punish one of these places in these times where people need this more than anything?
I know.
All right, moving on. Oh, we haven't done this in a while. It's Films of the Year That Was, the series where Kyle and I go back into time and see a Academy Award-winning film from various years. And I believe the year that we're up to now is 2004. And we saw two films. We saw the domestic winner of the Academy Awards, and we saw the foreign winner of the Academy Awards. And I want to start with the domestic winner of the Academy Awards, which was what?
Crash.
What was that?
Crash.
Crash. I should point out, I accidentally bought the wrong film. Apparently, there's another film called Crash that came out only a few years before that, and it had better reviews. I thought that was it. And thankfully, you pointed out that the year didn't match, so I bought the other Crash. And I guess I want to see the first Crash. I really do. This Crash was, well, it was interesting. It certainly held my attention, but I don't know. What did you think?
Well, it's interesting. My memory of it seemed a lot, it was like a lot, quote, better, maybe more of a novelty at the time. Like, wow, this is different. This is talking about things that you don't ordinarily see, like, up front in a major production, at a time when there was more awareness of that kind of stuff. In having it written into a screenplay was just that much more. So I remember how kind of hard-hitting it was. And there was a lot of movies like that. I think of, like, Higher Learning and other stuff that, like, was trying to talk about difficult issues in everyday life.
Do you know this whole thing was inspired by a carjacking?
I actually did not until I was just sitting down to prepare. Apparently someone
the director was carjacking, said, you know what, I'm going to make a movie out of this. You know, he also wrote the screenplay for Million Dollar Baby, the Academy Award winning film from the previous year.
Did he?
I also didn't care for that film so much.
Okay, so yeah, that I can see some similarities there.
It just seemed very elementary, like after school special ish, and trying to tackle every issue.
Very much, as I said before, very much in your face, beating you over the head with it, mm-hmm. At every turn, trying and being very gimmicky with, like, how everyone is sort of fits together. I liked parts of it, I guess, is my
answer.
I did
too. It was riveting. It kept my attention, but I just felt like this beat Brokeback Mountain. This was the best film of that year. Even I think they went back to the people who voted years later and asked them, if you voted today, what would you say? And they pretty much resoundingly said, no, we were wrong. Brokeback Mountain. Even the director said this wasn't the best film of the year. I think people in the Academy were just trying to send a message that they were racially woke, but and they were still homophobic, so they couldn't vote for Brokeback Mountain at the time. This film suffered from what I call the Shy Syndrome. I love The Shy. It's a program on Showtime about the inner city in Chicago. But it suffers from everybody doubling back into each other, like knowing other people two different ways. Like, you know, this person that someone is going out with is also the daughter of somebody that is connected to the first person's parents in a different way. That's not how life works. It works that way if there are 20 people in the world, but it doesn't work that way in a city. And this film did the same thing, where basically there were all these coincidences where this person happened to be the same person that did this to a friend of the first person. And it just, it got unbelievable at certain points.
I see what you're saying. I think there's maybe one or two more of those kind of instances in The Shy in general, but this was the point of this screenplay. Like, it was supposed to be all of these epiphanies, like, oh, you think that this is what this type of person is, this is actually what they're going through, or this mm-hmm. is actually you know, it's constantly trying to pull you back. So they're being very clever about it, and
they're trying to be very clever about it.
Okay, but you can only, I think, do this once. And I don't know that it didn't age well.
No,
in a lot of ways. As much as I like certain parts of it, I liked a lot of the performances. Some of the actors are first time. A lot of crossover performances, and it just had I don't know, like, just like you said, a little bit too much emphasis. But it's supposed to click together like that. I mean, that. But I don't think it could be like in a series. It's maybe like more noticeable because you're with it for the duration. This is like you don't have as much character development. So
no.
you see them interacting this way. You're like, wow, this is kind of how it is in a day in the life. But
it's basically what Spike Lee did with Do the Right Thing, except he did it well, where basically you see these characters and they all have flaws, but they all have their good sides as well. But it plays out in a much more realistic way. Here you have everybody's a racist for one thing, whether you're black, white, Asian, doesn't matter. You all say these horrible things. And then you all are basically trying to make a better life and you're sympathetic characters, and like you said, there are all these epiphanies, all these miracles that keep people from actually getting hurt, in the entire film, I think only one person really gets killed within the film. Someone else, I think, is killed before the film. But it just isn't how life works. And I know that the director said that he was basically trying to attack both the racists, but also the liberals, for saying that we live in a post-racial world. And liberals don't say that. Liberals are constantly saying, no, racism is still here. So I don't know what his point was. It just, you know, I admire him for getting this film done on a fairly low budget. But I just don't think the storytelling was really there. There's one thing. It keeps trying to be profound. At the very beginning of the film, basically, two of the police detectives are for some reason in a car crash, which I never really go back to. But basically, they've spun around twice. That's how it opens. And the male detective, Don Cheadle, I think, said that here in Los Angeles, this is what you say after you're in a car crash, here in Los Angeles, we isolate each other so much. Words to this effect. We don't touch each other, and so we crash into each other to get close. No, people don't do that. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard. Who goes out and crashes their car into people because they want more relationships in their lives? They want to be closer to people. That's not how it, I mean, maybe he hit his head or something like that, but that's kind of, when it's the first thing said in the film, you sort of think, okay, this is what they message they're trying to get across, and it just didn't connect with me.
Yeah, I think he means it's subconscious, but it's like,
it's
that
still
really
stupid?
Is that really a hazard in traffic? Like, you do have control of a vehicle when you're driving.
And he wasn't driving; the woman was driving, but she was also a police detective. And do you remember at the beginning of the film, they were talking to her like she's just an average citizen, saying, "Ma'am, you need to stay in the car," and yelling at her when she got out of the car to spew racial epithets at the Korean woman that she crashed into, and. Basically, any police detective would instantly flash their badge, so they wouldn't be talked to in that way. So that was kind of weird in and of itself. And
the rollover accident was too weird. She gets rescued the guy that was feeling her up and stuff.
Can I just say that? I will ruin the film. I'm sorry. But there are two police detectives that pull over a black couple, and you know, everybody's lives are intertwined many times over. But the racist cop, the older cop, molests the female passenger of the car while searching her.
Humiliating the husband.
Yeah, humiliating the husband and causing a big fight between the two of them later on. All kinds of, racial nuances there. The younger cop sees this and is completely finds it abhorrent. The next day, first of all, he requests to have a new partner. But the next day, the racist cop goes out, sees a flipped over car. Guess who's in it? It's the same woman. He saves her life. So the woman that he molested one day, the next day he saves the life. The young cop,
the good cop
who basically saw this this thing happen and wanted to change partners as a result. He the next day picks up a guy that tried to carjack the male driver of the car that was pulled over the day before, picks him up, has a conversation with him, and winds up shooting him because he misunderstands what he's doing. Because of racial bias. And again, you know, you have all these relationships that keep doubling over onto themselves. The same people keep running into each other, and that's not how life works.
Yeah, and it just, like, it shows the reversal with the two police officers being both good and bad in each moment.
Yeah, I mean,
there is that in life.
The racist cop saves a life, and the cop who wasn't racist, well, guess what? He turned out to be racist after all.
But we're not all, like, blissed out bearing witness to it. Like, oh, gee, I just did that. You mm-hmm. know, like, oh, wow.
It's more nuanced than that. It doesn't all happen in one day. You know, watch The Wire if you want something that really, you know, has layers to it. We have to move on to the international film, which, by the way, this was a film. Oh, my God.
Next. Yeah. This rocked. I will tell you, it's Tsotsi.
Tsotsi, is that how you say it?
Tsotsi.
South African film about basically gangsters or hoodlums in Johannesburg. People that are not good people, But boy, are they fascinating, and boy, are they interesting, and you find yourself rooting for them, which is really amazing. It's shot beautifully. It's just incredible storyline, so much tension, where you don't know what somebody is going to do next, and you're just on the edge of your seat. This is how a film should be made.
I love just the location shooting and color of the skyline they return to, how industrial and
it's orange.
It's just bright orange, and they capture the cast so well, and you have the sense throughout that these are not professional actors across the board, but they're directing them
mm-hmm.
in such a skilled way and using the space and everything around them so well. It was such a joy to like really be engrossed in that story, and just it was haunting, and I love how the protagonist just shifts. You see him, and he's so cold and removed at the outset,
mm-hmm.
and by the end, he's changed, and that range is so impressive. It sneaks up on you.
And it could be done badly. It could be oversimplified, where basically this guy is a hardened criminal, and then all of a sudden, because of a baby, he turns into somebody who's more sympathetic. But it's not done in that way. It's done in a believable fashion, and it's not necessarily a happy ending. It's something that you really want to ride along with and see how it plays out, and you basically learn a lot. It's Tsotsi, spelled T-S-O... Hang on a second. T-S-O-T-S-I. Came out in 2004.
Yeah, he acquires a baby by basically robbing, stealing a car, and shooting a wife in this rich, affluent neighborhood, and then has to figure out whether to turn himself in and how to take care of this baby.
Yeah. Also, you know, in addition to the film itself, there's the musical score.
Oh wow! Yes.
This is what we're gonna go out with. Zola. Did a number of songs on the film. It's kind of like watching Trainspotting. It really is. It's that good.
This film, the South African film, is just, it rocked. It was so good.
Yeah.
Really, really, really entertaining.
So let's see. We recommend it. OTW@2600.com is our email address. Please write to us. Stay tuned for Finn. Keep listening to WUSB, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Sfiga teu diabo, já sala pra feloga, 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 sfiga teu diabo, já sala pra fe la pelle wedda Matenabi, matenabi, matenabi Pelle mele no kishwepe Shale wase ya batotan peli Matenabu kompa mina Shale wase ya batotan peli Pelle mele no kishwepe Shale wase ya batotan peli Pega na matenabi Shale wase ya batotan peli Pega mele mele no kishwepe Shale wase ya batotan peli Matenabu kompa mina Shale wase ya batotan peli Hele hele yo mswepe Shale wase ya batotan peli Ya batotan peli Matenabe ya batotan peli Ega satane koso peli Nitikane mswepe Ega satane makoreri Nitikano kulupa Matenabu kompa mina Shale wase ya batotan peli Ega na matenabu Shale wase ya batotan peli Ya
Man, oh man, this is Finn with you on Finn's Revolution right until the 9 p.m. hour right here on WUSB in Stony Brook. And we have a very, very special guest tonight, Mr. Jared Michael Nickerson from one of my favorite bands, Burnt Sugar. And we're going to be talking about this wild black futurist new album right after this. We'll be right back.
Yeah, so welcome to Finn's Revolution. We have a special night this evening talking to Jared Michael Nickerson of Burnt Sugar, the orchestra chamber, and brand new record, and which is quite the amazing thing. And this is the opening tune to the album Angels Over Okanda, right here, WUSB Stony Brook. And right after this, we shall be chatting with Jared Michael Nickerson. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.